2007-2280, Armstrong against LaSalle Bank. Mr. Bales.
Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is James Bales, and I represent the defendant appellant, LaSalle Bank National Association. Your Honor, we are here before the Court this morning with permission to review the February 22, 2007 order of the United States District Court for the Northern District of Illinois, which terminated pretrial proceedings in this litigation and suggested remand to the U.S. District Court for the Northern District of Alabama.
Mr. Bales, given that the panel and not the district court, the panel on multi-district litigation, has the authority to remand the case, why should we be granting interlocutory review of a mere suggestion for remand from the district court when you could litigate that issue before the panel, which has the authority to make the actual remand decision? I mean, is the suggestion for remand actually a decision on the appropriateness of a remand, or is it merely a signal to the panel that the pretrial proceedings have been concluded, in your view?
In my view, Your Honor, and I think in the view of every court that has looked at the issue, that the suggestion of remand is significantly more than it sounds. It is, in fact, a determination by the district court in circumstances of waiver that it has venue over the case and can retain it for the duration of the litigation. So a suggestion of remand isn't simply advisory to the panel, because once a district court considers an issue of a plaintiff's consent to that forum, 1407 becomes completely non-operational at that point, and the MDL panel has no authority or obligation to do anything. So the district court's determination is, in fact, quite significant when the issue of waiver is the reason for either granting or denying the suggestion. So in this particular instance, Your Honor, when Judge Moran basically had made a determination that the plaintiffs had not waived their rights to go back to the MDL panel, he employed a legal standard to do so that we think erroneously concluded that the plaintiffs had not, in fact, stipulated to him retaining the case. And at that point, the panel has no further authority.
Well, you know, you agree that the plaintiffs made an effort to preserve the remand rights in the initial case management order, which contemplated setting a trial schedule, but still, you know, recognize the possibility of a remand.
They did recognize that, Your Honor, but the
the
chronology is important.
Right. That's what I want to get to. How is the later scheduling order indisputable, as you maintain, evidence of a change of heart when it nearly sets the dates for pretrial proceedings regarding experts and dispositive motions and contemplates it contemplates a later trial date? In other words, what about what was done there is inconsistent with the case management's case management order's recognition that a trial schedule would be set despite the possibility of a Section 1407A remand? I am not seeing it.
Okay, Your Honor. The chronology here is important because, if you'll recall, the first thing that happened when this case came up from the Northern District of Alabama through the MDL panel was that the plaintiffs filed a consolidated complaint in the Northern District of Illinois. After that first consolidated complaint, the plaintiffs proposed a case management order, which they claim preserved their lexicon rights. But after that case management order was filed, a second consolidated complaint was filed, and that was the first time LaSalle was added to this litigation. Once LaSalle was added to this litigation, the plaintiffs never once again reaffirmed their intent to go back to the Northern District of Alabama. And it wasn't just a couple of orders where that happened. The very next event, after the plaintiffs had filed their complaint to bring LaSalle into this action, was one of their own attorneys had filed a proposed scheduling order with Judge Moran that was substantially different than the proposals that had been submitted to Judge Moran prior to that date. Generally, the case management order said cases to be prepared for trial by X date.
Look, it seems to me that a remand is mandatory under the statute, so that the question isn't whether the plaintiffs indicated an intent to seek remand, but whether they indicate an intent not to. And that's what we've got here. I mean, I really want help with this. I think it's very difficult and interesting. You appear to argue that the plaintiffs have a duty to affirmatively act to preserve their remand rights, even stating that even if the amended complaint is ambiguous, that it's class plaintiffs' privilege to insist on remand, and they should have been more careful, to protect it. But that just seemed backwards to me, because why should they have to affirmatively assert and protect their right to remand when the statute mandates a remand, which isn't lost? Well, it's lost. It is lost, not by failure to insist on it or protect it, but only by actions that are inconsistent with it. So you see my problem.
Well, I understand your question, Your Honor, but I frankly don't see your problem, because there is several things the plaintiffs did that are completely inconsistent with an intent to return to Alabama, and that is agreeing to trial dates before Judge Moran. What could you possibly be doing in a multi-district litigation that is temporarily in front of the court that could come close to making you have to agree to a trial date that is not only a date, but a time when it's supposed to be started, and a judge who's going to hear it?
As an old, very old trial judge, you could be trying to force a settlement.
But why should it be incumbent on the judge and the defendants to divine what their purpose was in insisting on a trial date? They wanted a trial date, and they got one.
Because there's a statute that we've got to get past.
Well, the statute, Your Honor, I think
it shall be remanded. The expectation under Section 1407A is that the case shall be remanded. So we've got to get past that.
Well, Your Honor, and I think I have a way to get past it. The most critical finding by the Supreme Court, in my opinion, when they construed Section 1407, was that it was a venue statute. And as a venue statute, it can be waived by the parties. So let's analogize for just a second to the general venue statute, 1391. Under 1391, you have mandatory, and I'm going to put that sort of in quotes, places where venue is proper. But we all know that once you've leaped the hurdle to go from the state system to the federal system, and the courts have jurisdiction, you can actually file your lawsuit anywhere you want. The only time that the venue provision in 1391 becomes a mandatory proscription is if somebody objects.
What would have told plaintiff's counsel that accepting and even requesting these trial dates constituted a waiver of their venue?
Well, I think that if they had paid attention to cases like carbon dioxide, where the court found very specific incidents, that convinced the district court in that case that the parties intended to stay in Alabama. They may have realized that when they do things that have sort of significant repercussions, like filing complaints that attest to jurisdiction in the forum you're in, when they repeatedly not only agree to a trial date before the judge, but then go in and defend those dates when the defendant tried to move them, you are clearly indicating and doing things that are inconsistent with the nature of what you would ordinarily expect litigants to do in a temporary MDL forum. It's just not consistent that any litigant would be doing those things if they didn't intend to stay there. Your Honor, I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Bates. Thank you. We'll hear now from Mr. McAllister.
Very well, Your Honors. Good morning. Gary McAllister and Pamela Slate from Slate Kennedy, Montgomery, Alabama. Gary McAllister from Chicago, Illinois. We represent the Armstrong class of 5,000 non-retirees involved in the case against LaSalle. This case is one about choice, one that a mandatory choice under Lexicon. Everyone agrees, and no one can dispute, that Lexicon stands for a court not being able to override a plaintiff's choice of forum in an MDL proceeding. LaSalle's position cannot be followed without violating Lexicon and our overriding choice and the statute 1407A. Neither the court nor LaSalle asked us to choose our forum for trial before the end of the pretrial proceedings, so we did not have to. We chose the Northern District of Alabama because that's where all of the plaintiffs reside, and our consolidated complaints filed pursuant to court order have always remained the identity of the Alabama plaintiffs and our intent to return.
Has the panel itself ruled on your remand request?
No, what occurred with regard to that, Judge, and I'd like to answer that question specifically and one that you put to Mr. Bales, if I may. First of all, the suggestion of remand is nowhere near as significant as Mr. Bales says. It is a suggestion to the panel, the only court that has the authority to remand, the JPML, that the case is concluded and it is appropriate either because you have concluded the proceedings or that there's been a change in circumstances, as we know from the securities case that was here in Illinois, we'll talk about in a moment. It goes back up, and then that panel has the authority to do that. On we announced in court, first of all, we were successful below, of course, and he did suggest the remand. They came in for a motion reconsideration, to which we objected. We advised the court in open court and in papers during the proceeding that we were filing, in accordance with the rules of the JPML, the motion to remand in the MDL proceeding, the JPML court. The court below then granted this 1292 relief so that they could come before Your Honors on a permission petition. The JPML clerk would not accept the motion pending your decision in the Seventh Circuit as to whether to go forward. Frankly, we believe, and I'm now going to the question you asked Mr. Bales, we believe that the motion panel should be overruled, that there was an improvident granting of this appeal. And I ask you to do that respectfully, and there's certainly plenty of authority in our papers to support that. In this case, we made our choice at the earliest possible moment that we were required to do so and that we could. We finished the deposition of the last expert on Friday, the 1st of February, and on the very next Monday, we filed our motion for suggestion of remand. To point to actions that apply that there's been any relinquishment of our choice of forum is to override our choice without our consent.
Now, given that all of the original defendants subject to the transfer order were out of the case by the time you sought remand, should we consider that original case to have been effectively terminated under 1407A? And that, of course, would eliminate the need for remand, particularly given your admission to in the amended complaint that venue as to LaSalle is proper in Illinois. I mean, I would have loved to have seen a case in which all, you know, all defendants subject to a transfer order were eliminated, but a case was still remanded pursuant to Section 1407A. And maybe there is one in the brief, and I just missed it.
Well, there is no effective conclusion of the proceeding from an MDL standpoint. The MDL continues.
Sure.
LaSalle was properly added to a case in which there was proper venue and continues to be proper venue, which we believe we will win in the event that's ever raised, which can only be raised in the Northern District of Alabama. General instrument corporate security litigation is directly on point on this issue. Just because the allegation of venue in the consolidated complaint says that Illinois venue is proper does not waive any right to seek remand or transfer. Simply because venue is proper in one district does not mean that venue is not proper elsewhere. Both Alabama and LaSalle, Alabama is appropriate venue for both Amstead and LaSalle under 29 U.S.C. 1132E2, the ERISA venue statutes. They both can be found there. They both can be served there. They both conduct business there.
So I take it that your answer to my question as to whether there are any cases, which I didn't see in your brief, is no?
There are virtually no cases on this point, on any of these points. And why is there such sparse authority? The reason is because Lexicon basically says that that the remand obligation is impervious to judicial discretion. It's a categorical limitation that the authority of the courts to override a plaintiff's choice of forum is rarely to be disturbed in the MDL context. This is a rule that applies to us in the MDL context, which is unique. It is not something we can bootstrap on to some venue argument like he's trying to do either under forum nonconvenience 1404, 1406. It's simply different.
And I take it that you're really not asking us to overrule a motions panel. You're asking us to dismiss for lack of jurisdiction.
Yes, ma'am. Subject matter jurisdiction can never be waived in this regard.
And what about all of the efforts by the plaintiffs to encourage the transferee judge to set trial dates and opposing defendants' efforts to move those and so forth? Doesn't that waive?
Absolutely. Does it weigh on it? No. Absolutely not, Judge. I mean, Judge Rovner has just properly said two things. First, it's an absolute appropriate litigation strategy to get a trial date. We all know that something that makes a case move to a conclusion is a trial date, and everybody works backwards from that. It also has, particularly in a class action setting, a salutary effect for settlement. And we were engaged, actively involved in settlement negotiations before Judge Denlow. I think that the cases, I mean, if we look at these cases and the authority that it even is remotely involved here, we bring in the American Patriot Insurance case, which is a Seventh Circuit case. We get carbon dioxide, which counsel has mentioned. We get SOLAS. All of those cases are directly relevant here. And the reason they're relevant is because in each and every one of them, SOLAS being a slight exception, there was an absolute stipulation, an express giving up of the right of remand, an agreement in a final pretrial order. That's carbon dioxide. They actually stipulated that they were going to try those antitrust cases before the MDL judge. The class and all of the major group of opt-outs suddenly settled on the eve of court, and the one person that was not prepared to try the case in carbon dioxide was doing anything he could to get out of that trial in that court. Totally different. There's a final pretrial order. SOLAS is even more important here. It is a mass tort, and this is one dealing with bellwether trials, which is not involved in this case. And, in fact, that's one of the specific findings that Judge Moran made. In SOLAS, the court sat down and said, if you want to try bellwether cases on the welding fumes cases, here's what we're going to do. Here's the procedure, and you're going to expressly consent to it. It was the court and the defendants and the parties that all combined to come together. He says, don't you bring me a case that has Lexicon issues. You choose cases that do not present a Lexicon trial impediment. The trial candidates would have needed to have filed their actions directly in the MDL court. They would have had to have expressly waived any objections they might have, and they had to cure any venue issues by the refiling of their complaints in the MDL court. The court recognized expressly that the plan could only exceed in the face of Lexicon in 1407A that the plaintiffs waived any objection to venue that they might have under 1407. There was no explicit stipulation to venue on the record as that in that particular case, as you know from reading it. But in this situation, this case was hand-selected from the defendant's list with these conditions expressly made by the court. It was the counsel, it was the choice and the conscious and deliberate choice made in conjunction with the judge. We feel that this appeal should be dismissed. We have been at this for 6 years, and we are yet to get our opportunity to present this case to the trial. The appeal,
maybe part of that is your own fault, huh?
I don't think so. We've been up here twice. And we feel certainly, Judge, that this case and the position being taken by the defendant is not a proper reading of African American slave descendants. And if that's to say that, then Judge Moran's order to file a consolidated complaint, he was ordering for us to file to proceed a trial here. He didn't intend that. We didn't intend that, and we have an absolute choice under 1407. We made a timely and an appropriate request for remand, and we ask that this case, that this appeal be dismissed, and that the question that we feel is appropriate, as in our papers, is that the district judge applied the correct standard, and the Judge Moran be affirmed, the suggestion of remand being stated if you don't otherwise dismiss the appeal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McAllister. How much time does Mr. Bales have? Thank you.
I'd like to respond to a few things that Mr. McAllister said during oral argument. The first question or issue that I'd like to raise is that he continually talked about choice during his part of the argument. And choice is, in fact, the key here, because as Lexicon makes abundantly clear, that despite what Section 1407 says, that as a venue statute, you can still choose to stay in the transferee forum if you want to. Carbon dioxide makes that very clear out of the 11th Circuit.
But they don't want to.
But, Your Honor, that's a question.
I don't know why not. But
Your Honor, I think that that is the central question. They say they don't want to. But if you take a look at the October 1st, 2003 hearing before Judge Moran, when Ms. Slate, who is here at counsel's table, appeared before the court and not only said she didn't want the trial dates moved, but proposed alternative trial dates for Judge Moran to try the case, if that wasn't consent, what was it? We have the transcript. We can read it.
It was snookery.
It was snookery. Okay, and then after that, when we first come down from the panel, or from the previous panel after the reversal, the first thing that Judge Moran does is he sets a trial date and blocks 3 weeks out of his docket. Did the plaintiffs complain about that? No.
Maybe she changed her mind.
Well, Your Honor, that's, I guess, the point. You get to change your mind.
Well, sure you do.
Why? Because
you're a woman.
See, Your Honor, the point is that change of mind, though, has very prejudicial effects on LaSalle. Because we were banking on the fact that we'd be able to secure live witnesses up here. And we were banking on the fact that plaintiffs agreed to try it up here. If they hadn't agreed to try it up here, we would have done things differently. We would have taken
banking what? What would you do differently? Can't you make all these arguments in Alabama and get, if the venue is really better here and more convenient, can't you make all those arguments there?
We can certainly make those arguments, and we will make those arguments if this gets remanded. But the point is, they did agree to stay up here. And the best.
There's evidence LaSalle Bank can't present in Alabama?
If we can't get it out of Alabama, yes, because if you look at our witnesses, LaSalle's trust department is gone. The people who did this, the valuation is from are from Duff and Phelps here in Chicago. Amstead's people are all here in Chicago. Essentially, LaSalle has absolutely no live witnesses at all on the facts that are within 100-mile subpoena power of Alabama. We can't try this case down there. We just simply can't do it at all. And if we would have known that the plaintiffs were planning on backtracking on 4 years of unambiguous agreement to try the case up here, we would have done something differently. We would have taken depositions of some of these people to make sure that we preserved the issues that we needed. We don't have that choice now because 10 days before the pretrial order, they decide, oh, time to go back down to Alabama, even though it had been clear from the trial dates being set and reset repeatedly that Judge Moran was going to try this case. They just got cold feet at the end and decided they would be better off where they came from. There's no sane construction of 1407 that can allow that to happen. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
How much cases will be taken under advisement?